afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, August 23rd, 2022. Good afternoon, Dave.
Good afternoon, Melody, and happy Cuban Sandwich and Sponge Cake Day.
Oh, they're both good.
I know.
Are you sure you don't mean SpongeBob Cake Pants or whatever he's called?
SpongeBob SquarePants.
Pants, yeah.
Yes, he who lives in a pineapple under the sea.
Uh-huh.
Yes, absorbent and yellow and porous is he.
Uh-huh.
Yes, yes. Well, I made myself that grilled ham, cheese, and pickle sandwich for lunch, and I'm going to head out right after today's program in search of a slice of sponge cake to top it all off.
There you go. Those Cuban sandwiches are pretty good. They're not all good when you go out there and buy them, but if they're made properly, they're pretty tasty.
They are.
They're pretty tasty. So, well, let's go ahead and get to the gold and silver prices. You have gold up $10, almost 11 in the New York spot price aftermarket, $1,749. Silver is up 13 pennies at $19.21. Platinum was up 4, 892. Palladium was down 19 at 2,053. The USDX today, of course, was a little bit weaker, not by much, 0.36. It's still 108.60. Crude oil was up 3.27, 93.63. I guess that comes on the basis of the Saudis said, well, we might cut production. I mean, it's just so ridiculous. But anyway, crude oil up 3.27, 93.63. Paper markets today, they still fell today, not by much, barely 0.5% on the Dow, 32,909. S&P, 4,128, down 9. NASDAQ, just basically unchanged, at 12,381. Asian markets were all negative. Europe was all negative. Bond 3.06. That was stronger by just a little bit. And we're going to talk a little bit. Well, natural gas came down a little bit today, 9.277. It seems like when it gets up to that level, between 9 and 10, you get a lot of profit takers in there is what I'm assuming. But still very high. And, you know, it's a trend that has been building, and we're going to talk a little bit about natural gas here in just a little bit. So that's pretty much it in the precious metal markets and so forth. We're going to talk a little bit today about, the global slowdown. Everyone knows it's coming, so it's really not a big surprise. And but we see it in manufacturing, service sectors, the slowdowns in some of the world's biggest economies. The degree of pain is a little bit different, but still it's the trend that is the same. The data is the latest to suggest the global economy may be tipping into a recession. This morning, the S&P Global released its gauge of private sector activity for a slew of countries. And you know what? None of them were very good. In the U.S., a composite index of manufacturing service sector activity dropped to 45 in August from 47.7. So we see, and we always bring this up, we always see that any level below 50 always indicates contraction. Service sector logged the steepest rate of decline, which is kind of surprising considering this is the summer, as good producers saw output drop modestly. Activity in Japan's service sector fell into contraction territory, and their manufacturing registered the lowest reading since January. So again, we're seeing all these world economies in the Eurozone. Their survey looked grim. We see their output declined again. Germany, France, they're particularly weak. And can't imagine what the third quarter might be, Dave.
Yeah, it won't be good.
No.
certainly not as good as all the forecasters expected just a few weeks ago, in fact. inflation is having an effect on spending, and supply constraints are still hurting manufacturers. You have Commerzbank's Christoph Weil, who says that Russia is supplying only a limited amount of gas. High inflation is tearing deep holes in the coffers of private households, and companies are facing massive uncertainties. The economic outlook for the Eurozone is bleak. Now, the survey of activity in the UK remains slightly above 50, but factory activity there saw a bigger than expected slowdown as well. Now, a key part of this slowdown, the strength of the dollar, of all things, still hovering above 108. It's wreaking havoc around the globe. The flip side of the dollar's rally is slumping currencies elsewhere. The euro, for instance, at its lowest level since 2002. And, of course, the dollar strength is a result of the Fed's interest rate hiking campaign that's been faster and somewhat steeper than most of its central banking peers. But the result of the recent rise is rising inflation pressures for many countries as imports that are priced in dollars just become more expensive. And for poorer countries, Melody, that dollar-denominated debt becomes more expensive.
It certainly does. And excuse me, we talked about the our Fed raising rates in other countries too, and everybody's blame. You know, it's funny. I have to laugh. You know, because everybody's pointing to Powell saying he's done it too late and he's the cause of all this. You know, folks, this was all going to happen regardless of whatever anybody does. They can only do the various things in order to keep it from happening too soon. And that goes with our country and every other nation around the world. So, you know, we look at them changing their interest rates. Some countries, started to raise rates a little bit sooner. But yet most of these countries don't have the same problems that we have. You know, they might not be affected in the same manner if we would have started raising rates sooner. So, it's an interesting. You had the too big to fail Goldman Sachs. They sort of studied some results in various countries. They were probably looking to find some investments and so forth. But, the discussion is hoping that these countries like Brazil, Poland, New Zealand. Who began raising interest rates last fall, you know, maybe they'll stay out of recession. No, they won't. This is a global deal going on. Everybody's going to be impacted by it. You know, we talk about food shortages. We talk about all kinds of shortages. And, Dave, I don't know if you had this. I just want to bring it up briefly. I was going to save it for tomorrow. But, I mean, it's just another. This is out of Bloomberg about the cotton industry. The global supply outlook, supply threats in U.S., Brazil, and Australia, they're all leading to a deficit. We look to Texas, accounts for more than half of U.S. cotton output. I mean, these are big numbers. Only 11% of Texas crops were rated good to excellent in the week to August 21st, and that was down 14% from a week earlier. Now, this is matching the lowest since 2011. And the portion of plants in poor to very poor conditions increased to 59%. Here we go. Cotton. They can't even keep cotton growing. We've seen it hit by drought. And, you know, so many other now Texas is being flooded, but you're going to see the Department of Agriculture cut its projection for domestic 2023 harvest by 20% to the lowest since 2009-10, helping fuel a 21% surge in cotton futures so far in August. So those numbers are going to, and when you see those numbers, every country's going to be going into a recession, Dave.
Yeah, you know, as I read this morning, these countries may not be in recession right now.
They will be.
But they will be.
Mm-hmm. Unless they change their equation to equal recession.
Hey.
Like we do. Oh, it's only that one sector, the housing. That's the one that's in recession, not everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and it doesn't take two negative quarters anymore. Nah, that's old school. We'll come up with a new one. Anyway, go ahead, Dave.
No, I'm done with that.
Oh, we finished with that? But just one more thing. When we talk about, the numbers and the cost of living, it is curbing spending. And we're going to continue to see all these things hurt in all of these countries. And then you're going to be adding, you want more inflation into this nation? How about forgiving $10,000 in student loan debt? You know he's going to do something. It's an election year. Got to get those votes out there, folks. And we're just giving this country away. We're just giving everything away. And it just baffles me that there's no one even creating a little bit of a wave. I mean, we should be having 30-foot waves with everything that's being given away. But now here's $10,000 more. And these are for students, borrowers who make less than $125,000. Well, what about those who make more? Well, I mean, they probably paid more in student loans. It's just so unfair to first of all to give anything to anyone, and then to give some to some and none to others. I mean, Dave, it's got my goat.
Well, we are where we are. I mean, some like Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders. I mean, Warren wanted or still does want to cancel $50,000 in debt for most borrowers. Sanders wants to eliminate all of the debt.
You're crazy.
We know that the country's outstanding student loan debt balance is over now $1.7 trillion.
Yes.
40 million Americans help to pay for some of their education, or at least borrowed money for that. And we know that, like you, this a sweeping student loan forgiveness is going to anger some Americans.
Should anger all of them. It really should. Should anger all.
Including those who never borrowed for their education or who went to college, as well as the millions who dutifully paid their loans for 10 or 15 years or more every month. Interesting, though, Morning Consult poll recently found that almost two-thirds of voters, 62%, support student loan forgiveness as a principle. Although I didn't read anything about specific amounts. But there you go. Some are saying the executive order could come as early as tomorrow. But Biden committed earlier to making a decision by the end of the month, which is next Wednesday.
And, you know, it doesn't really it's not anger. It's disgusting in the way it's not healthy for this nation when we're already so far in debt. And again, it's building more division against those and those who have and those who won't get. And I mean, it's just not healthy, and it shouldn't be done. I think there's other things. We've already given so many billions of dollars away to everything else, which shouldn't be done. It's just a free giveaway because it's an election year and it's part of it. But so no, it's frustrating. It's frustrating. It's disgusting. And I'm sure you didn't get your loan forgiven, Dave, when you went to college. You know,
I'm glad I had a lot less than the kids of today.
Well, there's a lot less inflation then too. And you didn't have these colleges that are, you know, people went after the oil executives and the oil companies about, gouging the people at the pumps and everything like that. Well, they're making tons of profit. Well, let's go to these universities. So why don't people get angry at them, at their tuitions that they're charging and what they're teaching? Some have. It's become a little bit more. But, I mean, you can, you know, we could target every industry out there, you know, who you know, what the oil companies supposedly have done. So, you know, it's just, it's inflation. And it's, and again, you're not supposed to do, if you don't have the money to do it, you don't do it. But we've taught debt is a good thing to do because government will take care of you. But anyway, back to the gas, natural gas. This week we've seen this volatility in the futures for natural gas. Have taken down numerous hedge funds over the years, jumped to nearly $10 per million BTU. Now it's currently trading at 9.75 range, the highest since July of 2008. But listen to this, they're up 146% from a year ago and 350% from 3 years ago. So that tops off a series of spikes that started in early July. And you know, the price has now recovered all of its plunge that started in June. We saw when a fire damaged and shut down the Freeport Natural Gas Liquefaction Plant in Texas, which cut LNG exports capacity by 17%. So the plant is scheduled to resume exports at partial capacity in October. But, you know, there's still parts of that plant that's damaged, and it's going to take a little bit longer to repair. And it did remove some demand from the U.S., and the plunge in price was a classic knee-jerk reaction. And so we'll see how this follows through, Dave.
Yeah, that utility gas pipe to the home fell by 3.5% in July. That was the first monthly decline since January. Certainly a welcome relief after the spike in prior months. That's 8.2% in June from May and 8% from May to April. The two-year surge in natural gas prices was powered by U.S. exports, which have been booming. Seven new exporting terminals coming online in the last 6 years.
Yeah, awesome. And I hear the music. It's that time. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter and, of course, the blog that comes out on Fridays, edited and published by my good friend Dave Allen. So, thank you, Dave.
And my pleasure.
We need to start attaching some specials to those things soon. So anyway, I think we talked about this one before, but it really does, you know, and we're going to talk a little bit about Ford too again with the drop in jobs. And I think it's important because it really does show where we're headed, and it's going to be more and more expensive for folks. And already people are having a difficult time with the rising costs of goods and housing, and there's a high levels of stress. Excuse me, Americans are more likely than ever to rate themselves as suffering. Now, this was according to a new survey released yesterday by Gallup. And, you know, my question, though, Dave, is I know people suffer with all of these issues, but are we softer, too, than we used to be? So, like, maybe some of these issues wouldn't create as much a high-level stress as, you know, because we're a little more whiny now and so forth. Not to say that the dollar doesn't buy as much as it used to. It doesn't. And people are having that stress, absolutely. But I wonder with some of these other things that are included in that survey, if it's, you know, normally. But we do live in a different world, and when we listen to the news and how divided we become and all the stress, the violence and everything that we hear, I guess that would raise anybody's blood pressures. But since 2008, Gallup measured Americans' quality of life by asking them to rate their lives on a scale of 0 to 10. This month, for the first time since Gallup began asking the question, more than 5% of respondents, actually 5.6 to be exact, gave their lives and circumstances a rating of 4 or lower. The percentage represents about 14 million American adults. Compared with 1 year ago, the number of people reporting that they are suffering in their everyday lives, it's doubled. It's doubled. Using the Cantrell Self-Anchoring Driving Scale, that's a mouthful, Gallup classifies respondents who rate their lives as 5 or 6 as struggling, and those who say that they're at a 7 or above as thriving. So since November 2021, Omicron variant began spreading. The percentage of people who describe themselves as thriving has dropped about 15% from 59 to 51. So low numbers of Americans have rated themselves as thriving at other points, including November 2008 during the Great Recession, April 2020, the economic shutdown, and, of course, the spread of virus across the country, Dave.
Yeah, and the share of people who say they're suffering has grown since the beginning of the pandemic. Inflation hit a new 40-year high in June. You know, the gas prices contributing to financial hardship for two-thirds of Americans. Uncommon Dreams reported earlier this month that almost 100 million people in the U.S. this year have been forced to cut back on essentials. That's one-third of our population. Those cutbacks include meals, utilities, driving. And that's, you know, in order to afford things like health care. 26% delayed or avoided medical care altogether due to cost. Now, corporations and the Fed have both claimed that rising compensation for workers is behind inflation and soaring prices. But labor leaders and some lefty economists argue that skyrocketing pay for already wealthy executives has worsened inequality while also driving inflation. I think reasonable people can agree that all of those factors have had differing levels of contribution. Gallup also surveyed people about their stress and worry levels just last month and found that 48% said they were experiencing daily stress. And that's up about 5 percentage points from a year earlier. And 42% said they feel worried on a daily basis, up from 38% a year ago. Yeah, does this say we're in a funk? Kind of. It says a lot of different things. But one thing we know from the past, Melody, is that when business and consumer sentiment is low, people just aren't out there spending as much and perhaps as much debt as we're in right now. That isn't necessarily a bad thing.
You know, I don't understand. I mean, Gallup does these polls. I'm just being a little ornery here. I wonder how much money it costs to do these surveys, the amount of time. I mean, it is just kind of little common sense, Dave, that if inflation and high gas prices and so forth, people aren't going to feel as good. You know? And, you know, you could pretty much tell by, you know, certain things. I mean, it's kind of a given. So I'm not always sure. I think they're interesting. And
well, one thing we know for certain since this pandemic is that we human beings, misery loves company.
Yeah. But again, I think it's also our you know, I think a large part of it is just seeing, you know, it isn't just inflation. It's just, yes, that's a big part of it. You know, who termed it? It's the economy stupid. Wasn't that Clinton? I think it was Clinton. And I think that's really true. I think it is the economy. And,
well, I think psychologists might say, too, one of the values of a poll like this is that it tells those who are the sufferers that, you know, their struggle isn't alone, that there are a lot of others in the same boat.
So that, well, I mean, we don't know all the criteria, but, you know, I mean, some people, they struggle all their lives. It doesn't matter what if we're in a recession or not, they struggle. I mean, that's just a fact of life. I mean, I don't know. I wonder if they break it down by, you know, I'm sure they do, but they just probably don't let us privy to that. But I don't know.
Well,
these are just questions that are just curious, you know.
Over 100 years ago, writer Scott Nearing wrote that some people yearn for a comfortable existence and others just keep on struggling.
Yeah.
And that's all they've known. But a little different in a country like ours, where you know, the so-called American exceptionalism, or you know, the move into the middle class to be all that you can be, creates a different kind of mentality. So when you're not doing so well, that that can have some pretty big impacts on your psyche.
Yeah, but even some of those folks, I mean, when there was there used to be jobs for every class of people, good paying jobs. If you wanted them, they were there. And you had to have motivation. And I, you know, if you don't have motivation, you don't have, you know, good work ethics and all that kind of stuff. It doesn't matter if the, you know, it's there for the taking or not. You're not going to take it. You're not going to grab it. And that's just, you know, but I don't know. So it is harder for people to get those better jobs and so forth, because they're not there. And, but anyway,
well, they're just a heck of a lot more people today competing.
It's true.
For a smaller piece of the pie of the American dream.
And look how many illegal aliens have been coming in. They'll all be competing for those lower wage jobs.
Yeah, but a lot of those jobs, let's remember, are jobs that Americans don't want.
I don't buy that. Americans want, well, but they, I disagree with that, because I think Americans just don't want to work sometimes. Just like, what is it?
Well, that's
Tesla.
The point is we need
people
we
don't want to go. People don't want to go back to people don't want to go back to the office. Well, I don't think we need illegals in here doing that. They can come in legally, but they're still going to be competing for some for these jobs. I mean, maintenance and construction. You know, there's a lot of things out there that that now people have to compete for and so forth. And we know who the construction companies go for. They're not going to go for the guy who wants a little more in wage because he's a little more skilled. I mean, that's just life. But it's – and when we have a Treasury Secretary, a former Treasury Secretary, saying that the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, is causing confusion – I think he's correct, because the Fed is avoiding a clear declaration that unemployment is likely to rise during its fight against inflation. You know, we see all these great numbers coming out with rising rates, and it's going to make an impact. And Summers, he is a frequent critic of the Fed's handling of inflation. He detailed his concerns. And we look to Jerome Powell, who's supposed to deliver a very pivotal remark on Marx on Friday at the Fed's annual economic conference in Jackson Hole in Wyoming. So we'll have to see what else comes out of Jackson Hole. Summers said that his worst fear would be that the Fed will continue to be suggesting that it can have it all in terms of low inflation, low unemployment, and a healthy economy.
Hey.
We're in la-la land, aren't we, Dave?
Well, I hear more and more that Jackson Hole is on the verge of a major heat wave by the end of this week. A lot of hot air coming out of Wyoming.
It's something they don't need, but they're
Indeed.
Going to get. But they're going to get.
Indeed.
So.
Well, it's interesting. The Fed, you know, which looks at headline unemployment, much to my chagrin, because it's so underreported. But just to compare apples to apples here, the Fed has been talking about unemployment rising to 4.1% by 2024 as it hikes rates. But Summers has argued that unemployment headline unemployment has to rise to at least 5% to successfully bring down inflation, and potentially a lot higher than that. He pointed out that markets have rallied in recent weeks. sign that investors don't yet see the Fed's effort to cool the economy as restrictive enough. Well, we'll certainly know more in the coming months. But in the meantime, there continues to be a heck of a lot of uncertainty out there. I think that uncertainty will continue, at least in the short term, until we start to see some of these movements in layoffs, GDP growth crystallize, if in fact they do. But hang on there, ladies and gentlemen. Winds are blowing.
You know, this is kind of interesting. You know, I thought it was Tesla. I don't know if they were one, but this was Apple that were ordered office orders to go back to work. And the employees launched a petition saying the firm risks stifling diversity. Let me bring out my violins, ladies and gentlemen, and staff well-being by restricting their ability to work remotely. The petition is in response to all-employee memo for Apple CEO Tim Cook, who last week said workers would have to come into the office for at least 3 days a week.
Go figure.
Go figure, I know. Shame on you, Apple, Tim Cook. My gosh, take him to the doghouse and tie him up. How could he stifle diversity? Oh, my goodness gracious. It's really ridiculous. But you know what? These employees know the words to use. Mm-hmm. Diversity. Yes. You know, that'll be a word that could get you anything you want in today's world. And, so beginning September 1st, they were supposed to go back to work Tuesday, Thursdays, and a third day. And that was supposed to be determined by individual teams. And this plan was a little bit looser than some of the previous proposals that have forced staff to return Monday, Tuesdays, and Thursdays. It really is sad. It really is sad, Dave. But, hey, what say you?
I have nothing to add. I will just bring tears to this story.
You want to share my violin, too?
Yes.
We talked about yesterday about, so we'll just skip on real quick to, we don't have time, we have 2 minutes, but U.S.-South Korea joint military exercises begin again. And so again, just a possible more, I don't know, distrust or whatever you might call amongst our buildup or concerns what's going on in some of these foreign waters. Anyway, we'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, bringing it home this segment. While Melody takes care of other client business, you can call her at 1-800-375-4188. Now, real quickly here to start off this third and final segment, the National Constitution Center in my home area of Philadelphia is going to honor Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky with this year's Liberty Medal. Center will honor him in a ceremony in October. The center named Zelensky its 2022 award recipient yesterday as Putin's invasion of Ukraine reaches the six-month mark. Now, Zelensky will join past recipients Malala Yousafzai, Colin Powell, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and John McCain in receiving the award. Zelensky says he plans to put the $100,000 prize money toward the country's newly established Ukrainian Veteran Fund. Very fitting tribute. Our latest American Survival newsletter has once again hit the streets. I have an article in this week's edition called Home Builders See the Recession. American housing system is broken, ladies and gentlemen. It's bad for home buyers and for home builders. It's even worse for renters. To put it bluntly, the U.S. desperately needs more high-quality rental housing, a lot of it. These are far different times than those of our grandparents who came home from World War II to go to college on the GI Bill and find affordable single-family homes to raise their new families in. Today, homeownership still works for many, but doesn't for many others, especially those who aren't ready to settle down in one place or who don't have an ample nest egg to tie up all their savings in. And builder sentiment, for single-family homes anyway, has fallen well into negative territory this month as builders and buyers alike struggle with higher costs. National Association of Home Builders Housing Market Index dropped 6 points this month to 49, its eighth straight monthly decline. Again, anything above 50 is considered positive. 49 is not. Notably, Home Builders Chief Economist Bob Dietz says tighter monetary policy from the Federal Reserve and persistently elevated construction costs have brought on a housing recession. Builders Index hasn't seen negative numbers since the start of the pandemic. Before that, it hadn't seen negative territory since June of 2014. Of the index three components, current sales conditions dropped 7 points to 57 in positive territory. Sales expectations over the next 6 months fell to 47, and buyer traffic fell to 32. The biggest hurdle for buyers, like many renters right now, is affordability. Home prices have been climbing since the start of the pandemic, and the average rate in the 30-year fixed mortgage, which had hit historic lows in early 2020, is almost double what it was at the start of this year. Yes, home price growth has cooled somewhat in recent weeks, while mortgage rates have also come down from their 6%-ish highs. But Dietz believes the total volume of single-family starts will post a decline for the whole of 2022, the first such increase since 2011. The Eternal Optimist adds, however, that peaking or falling inflation and stabilizing long-term interest rates may provide some stability for the demand side of the market in the coming month. So, renting becomes the only option for millions of Americans seeking shelter for themselves and their families. Now, there are those like venture capitalist Mark Andreessen, who calls renting a home a soulless experience. Someone who is bought into where he lives cares more about where he lives. Without this, apartments don't generate any bond between person and place, and without community, no bond between person to person. I beg to differ. Felix Salmon at Axios points to neighborhoods all across the U.S. with modest homeownership rates that often boast deep and lasting communities stretching across both generations and decades. He says excellent examples of this can be found in places like Harlem and New York and Hialeah in Miami. Sam Channon, who heads up NYU's Stern Center for Real Estate Finance Research, believes this. Ownership per se doesn't make you more invested in your community. It makes you more invested in decisions in the community that impact the value of your asset. Andreessen opposed multifamily development in his own hometown of Atherton, California, because he felt that would massively decrease home values there. Andreessen believes that technology and entrepreneurship can solve the problems of the rental market. Salmon counters that rental housing is most successful where they have broad housing security and affordability. Points to Germany as a good example. He says German renters build strong community bonds the way we all do, by getting to know their neighbors. They don't need all the amenities, which just tend to drive up rents. Salmon claims that the lack of affordable housing in America can be traced to the local or individual level, in particular, zoning, a major, possibly the biggest issue here in the U.S. NIMBYs, not in my backyard, like those in Atherton, are the rule here, not the exception. Getting permission to build new multifamily housing is often absurdly expensive and difficult to boot for builders. My home state of Pennsylvania, land development subdivision plans are required to be reviewed. Now listen to this, by the Municipal Planning Commission, the County Planning Commission, the County Soil Conservation District, the Department of Environmental Protection, as well as the State Highway Department, the Municipal Historic Preservation Committee, and other advisory boards if they exist, all before going before the elected governing body for final approval. It takes months, if not years. And if they have to, if they're requesting a variance to the local zoning code, they've got to spend more time and money going to the zoning hearing board for a variance or special exception. And education finance is close behind. As long as schools are funded primarily by local property taxes, parents are going to prefer high property values to affordable housing. According to the National Center for Education Statistics, in the 2018-19 school year, property taxes made up 80% of all locally derived revenues nationwide. In turn, that often increases the number of children in local schools without raising enough tax revenues to cover the cost of educating them. The good old American dream also gets in the way. After looking at the behavior of older millennials, Channon says the data suggests that home ownership is a natural and expected evolution, is deeply ingrained in the American psyche. Federal policies that favored home ownership are already a lot weaker than they used to be. 2017 tax reforms greatly reduced the number of people claiming the mortgage interest tax deduction, while government-subsidized 30-year mortgages are widely available on multifamily buildings. After they get married and start a family, buying a house and then voting against further new construction is just what we Americans tend to do, whether it makes financial sense or not. By now, we know the Great Recession following the financial crisis of 2008 caused new home construction, single family and multifamily, to fall off a cliff and not keep up with population growth. But now that's rebounded and more homes are being built than households are being created. There's still a housing deficit we need to build our way out of. Those who suggest our country is creating households faster than we're building households are just plain incorrect. I mean, the Census Bureau defines the household formation rate as the annual increase in U.S. adults multiplied by the so-called headship rate, which is always around 50%. Household formation plunged when the pandemic hit in 2020. We just stopped making babies. But even before then, in 2019, it was running at only about 900,000 new households a year. New residential construction, on the other hand, has been steadily increasing. Houses are being started at an annual rate of about 1.6 million units a year. That's well above the rate of household formation, even after you account for older units that are being demolished. Some, like Bleakley Financial's Peter Buchvar, says that multifamily home builders are responding to ultra-low vacancy rates by building faster. In a year or two, he adds, if we continue to build at current levels, rents might even start to come down. In the meantime, more young adults will continue moving back in with their aging parents to reduce their living expenses and save more for that elusively affordable rent or down payment on a house to buy.
Now,
speaking of children, a new article I saw today, raising a child more expensive than ever. Thanks to soaring inflation, of course, with the average cost, one child now, exceeding $300,000. According to the Brookings Institution, for a middle-income couple, it will cost a total of $310,600 to raise a child born in 2015 through the age of 17. That's just 10 years. The course of the child's first 17 years, that's an average of $18,000 a year in child-rearing costs. The total expenses have jumped $26,000 or more than 9% since the last calculation 2 years ago, due almost completely to rising inflation. Isabel Sawhill, who's a senior fellow at Brookings who led the study, told DailyMail.com that rising costs of child rearing could make some prospective parents think twice before having kids. The decision to have a child or another child is based on a lot of different factors, and of course cost is only one of them, but I do think the cost of children's affects people's behavior. Those are Sawhill's words, who's a PhD in economics. She added, we've already seen fertility rates dropping, and I think this will add to it. She further noted, it's not just that the price of child rearing has gone up because of higher inflation. It's that people need to be reminded they are going to have to pay for those costs. People are going to have to make trade-offs, either trade-offs in what they consume or how much they work. People need to think hard about what's entailed to have a child or a second or third or fourth or fifth. The new estimate of child rearing costs doesn't include any expenses for college either, calculating costs only through age 17, which essentially meant, I think, to get them through high school. Brookings calculations projected that housing would be the largest parenting expense, 29% of the total, followed by food at 18%, child care and education at 16%, and transportation 15%. New Brookings calculation was an inflation-adjusted update to a previous report from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which at the time projected parents would spend $233,000 raising a child born in 2015. Now, I do take issues with some of the numbers here, and don't have enough time today to go through that, perhaps on another program. Not sure we should take these figures with a grain of salt. However, over the past year, inflation, as we know, has sent the prices of a whole host of goods soaring, and families have felt the pinch. It means that the cost of everything, from haircuts to back-to-school supplies, has jumped painfully high, and low- and middle-income families in particular have been hit hard. Though gas prices have dropped off their recent peak, some offering some relief, food prices continue to go up, cost of groceries rising 13% in July from the year before. As I mentioned earlier, rising housing costs, which make up nearly a third of most household budgets, become a particular concern. Buying a home in the U.S. is the least affordable it's been in 33 years. Rents have also been rising sharply in most markets. Families priced out of home buying drive up demand for rentals. Seems like a big ugly cycle, doesn't it? We'll have to save further discussion for another day because we're all out of time for today's program. I'll be back on Thursday. Butch, join Melody tomorrow along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Thanks as always to our producer Todd and to you for tuning in to Financial. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Bye-bye.